just do a couple of things here first. We have a review of the agenda. Brianne asked for an update on the whiteboards. So, maybe we can get to that. We'll have that at the end of the meeting. Are there any other additions to the agenda tonight? Do I have a motion to accept the agenda as amended?
So moved.
So moved.
Second? Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Very good. Thank you. Any abstentions? Thanks. Up next are the minutes. Do I have any additions or corrections to the minutes?
Yes.
Go ahead, Charlie.
When referring to my question about the lottery during the last meeting, the gentleman responded that he was concerned that people of lesser income would be more disproportionately utilizing lotteries, and that was an objection on his part.
Okay. So you have a correction there, John?
That's the correction.
Okay, very good. Any other additions or corrections? Do I have a motion to accept the minutes as amended?
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Yep.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? And all those abstaining. Okay, let me jump to our board members. I will jump back to the other stuff later. We have Jim Corbin from Virginia and Lang Dorjo from District of Columbia who have come to talk to us today about where they see WMATA going. I think we have had lots of discussions lately about the budget. Certainly the bus routes, certainly Metro Access have been on the agenda. I don't know how you want to, we'd love to have you speak as for as long as you'd like, both of you. So we appreciate you coming and talking to the AAC. You have the floor.
Well, thank you very much. So I'm Jim Corcoran. I'm a board member from the Commonwealth of Virginia. I am the appointee of the governor of Virginia, Kerry McAuliffe. In Virginia, the four board members are represented by myself and then a representative from Arlington, from Alexandria, and from Fairfax County. So I am fortunate enough to be one of the voting members from the Commonwealth. Certainly, a lot of issues that we're looking at with Metro. The pressing one that we have in front of us right now is the budget. The Finance Committee will be making a recommendation to the board in 3 days on that. And it looks as though the budget is going to move forward as has been relatively proposed by the general manager. There will be some changes to that, I think, in committee coming up, but pretty close to what we have seen with some of the changes. And that approved budget is, I think, General Manager Wiedenfeld had it correct, and that there's going to be shared sacrifice by the jurisdictions, by the riders, and by everybody involved with WMATA and Metro. So we look forward to serving them. I know there has been a major issue with the pedestrian tunnel at Pentagon City individuals in this room and those that you represent, and certainly love to hear more about that from you. But primarily, I'm here to listen tonight to find out what I and we in the Commonwealth of Virginia can do on your behalf. And with that, Jim Clay.
Thank you, Jim. So just wanted to make sure I introduce myself, Lake Dorms Joe. I'm the director of the District Department of Transportation, and I also serve as an alternate to the WMATA board, and I serve on behalf of Mayor Muriel Bowser. I won't add too much more to Jim's comments regarding the budget process and how much attention we've been given to that over the past several months, and that we're certainly trying to minimize impacts on vulnerable populations, and we're trying our best to preserve as much service as possible. but we do have a very significant operating budget deficit. And the approach that the general manager has taken in terms of all of the above as a strategy for closing that budget gap, I think is ultimately what will win support. But the final details of that, you know, obviously will come into play in the next little bit. I do also want to highlight that from my vantage point, I'm acutely sensitive to ways that we can make our transportation systems and facilities more accessible. So part of that is working with Metro with regard to our rail, bus, and Metro Access programs. And I, in particular, spend a lot of time trying to make sure that there are more options available to paratransit customers. The Transport DC program, which is something that we have funded in District of Columbia for several years, is something that I know has been a positive, net positive, I think, improvement in terms of creating some options that allow for more convenience and flexibility and, frankly, have a better cost structure than the legacy Metro Access program. But at the same time, that program and how it's been administered has required some changes and adaptation, and we've worked closely with the Taxi Cab Commission, former Taxi Cab Commission, WMATA, to make sure that that program improves. I think we want to see more of those types of enhancements and options. So from my vantage point, I'm not just focused on WMATA, I'm focused on what we can do as a city government to be more just and equitable for all of our citizens and all of our users of the transportation system. We are very focused on making the bus stops within the District of Columbia ADA compliant. We have to retrofit a lot of bus stops, but we have a dedicated line item within our budget that we are spending down, and I hope to get more money as I can demonstrate that we can get more of those retrofits accomplished. So between Metro Access reforms, Transport DC, work that we can do to our physical infrastructure, I would include the Metro stations themselves to the extent that Metro is able to do some station improvements. We at the district are oftentimes willing to cost share to make our accessibility of stations better. And to the extent that people have comments about the programs that we have with some of the for hire vehicles, the transportation network companies, I know that that is an area of concern and potential opportunity to allow for more rides to occur on Lyft and Uber and some of those shared ride opportunities. But mainly I'd like to just hear comments and feedback, and hopefully you can give us something to work on and to deliver more value for you and the broader transportation community.
Excellent. Very good. Thank you so much for those remarks. And I'd like to open it up first to committee members who are from D.C. and Virginia, because these are your board members and you get an opportunity to speak directly to them. So who would like to be first?
I'm so glad that Conklin from Virginia, I'm representing the Fairfax County Supervisor Boulevard, and also the chairman of the Disability Services Board for the Fairfax County, and interested on advocacy on behalf of the people of disabilities on their transportation facilities in Wilmington. The question that I had, Mr. Carter, there has been a constant differences between the opinion of Virginia, Maryland, and BC when it comes to budget, raising the fare of the buses or metro access, or support of the, from the states to the WMATA to control their deficits, and issues like that. And there has been all the different opinions. And the question that we have from the point of view of supporting the disabled people's transportation facilities, is there any way that we could come to a conclusion that we know there's need for budget improvement? And I think Omada, manager, is working on it and doing very well. But why can't we take some leadership as a Virginia to support this process? And my second question to is a different from my first question is, what is the opinion of the state of Virginia and the government of Virginia regarding the UBART facilities accessible throughout the state?
Thank you. So as far as, I think you've actually seen quite a bit of, I'm going to call it cooperation, when it comes to the budget. There's a lot of questions floating out there around the budget. And when it comes to Virginia, no one in Virginia has ever said we're not going to fund that budget. What is difficult in Virginia is that we have to go to many different places to get the funding. So you need funding from Arlington, Alexandria, Fairfax. Loudoun will be into that mix in 2019 or thereabout. You have Falls Church and the city of Fairfax, all those. And then on top of that, when you look at the capital budgets, the state of Virginia contributes that. So there's a lot of moving pieces when it comes to Virginia. But no one ever said that we weren't going to support the request from the general manager. And in fact, we are looking at that. And actually, there's agreement to support what is being asked for the 2018 budget from the general manager that you'll hear about later this week in the finance committee. So recently, Virginia has not said that we will not support this. Now, there's another question about that. If you want to talk about dedicated funding that has been talked of, that would take approval at the General Assembly session, through the General Assembly in Virginia, to approve any kind of increase in tax, regional tax, to support that. That's where it gets difficult. There's not just one source of the income. But to this point, the governor has said he will put more money forth. I don't know that Virginia is the issue when it comes to supporting that. We do believe that there needs to be a well-rounded approach in looking at it. I think I use the term shared sacrifice. Maybe you just use a different word for it, but everybody has to contribute with all the above strategies. Thank you.
Shared opportunity or something like that.
But there's a big deficit out there. And we have to be looking at sources of revenue. We have to be looking at fares. Are they correct? We have to look at costs and whether those costs are what goes into having new rail cars, whether it is labor, whether it is repairs to those rail cars. All that has to be included in there. And I think this General Manager Wienfeld is doing that at this point. But to a certain extent, he does it with his hands tied. And the system could use some adaptation since it was put together in the 1960s and 70s. And that is what everybody is hoping for. But everybody has a solution, but you have to get those through a lot of jurisdictional approvals to get to that. But since I've been on the board the last 2 years, Virginia has not withheld any funding. The second part of your question was Uber, and how does Uber fit into that? And I will have to tell you that even as a board member, I have been conflicted is not the right word, but I have heard different messages even from those people who take advantage of Metro Access. Some of them really like Uber. You get there quicker, you get there with less planning. But not everyone can utilize Uber. Some people do have special needs. But I think Uber and taxi services can be a major part of the solution, not the only part of the solution. And if we can save money in doing that for the entire system, I believe we can make improvements elsewhere in the system without having to ask for more money from the users of the system.
Thank you. Thank you for that. And I guess you're pretty aware that this committee is on record supporting a dedicated funding source. And like everyone, getting there is half the battle. So, but we know it's needed rather than the way it's being done now. And I do also know that I forget whether it's 29 million or 21 million in concept WMATA are being suggested as part of this. So there is a lot of shared sacrifice as far as what's going on with the budget. Who else has their hand up? Billy Bunn. Thank you. You're next.
Thank you. I happened to hear today a portion of a public transportation seminar or forum on C-SPAN radio, and they were saying that they talked about the district a lot. You all should look it up if you haven't seen it. They were talking about the district and other rail systems in other cities and saying they're basically crumbling, and they were suggesting that, or someone was suggesting that people, city jurisdictions, stop pouring money into the rail system and go to these, some kind of super bus that will hold 200 people and will have dedicated lanes for the buses and so forth. So I was just wondering, has there been any discussion of a different future for transportation in D.C.? Oh, they were also critical of the trolley. Okay, that's it.
Well, I'll try to respond to that as succinctly if I can. I'm not familiar with that event, but if we can follow up, I'd be certainly happy to research the forum or seminar where some of that discussion may have occurred. I think it's fair to say that given the transportation infrastructure of the District of Columbia and the limits to our roadway capacity and potential expansion, we really do need now and into the distant future, a functioning metro subway system. The whole land use planning program for the past four decades or beyond is predicated on having high capacity premium subway transportation. And while maybe other Western cities that are going through growth or have more open land might be able to substitute rail projects or replace existing infrastructure with some sort of rapid bus transit alternative, we really do need to make sure that our metro subway system is carrying a good share of our commuting and traveling public. Certainly advances in bus technology and some of the traffic signalization systems that we have will make bus transport better and more time efficient, but I don't see this region turning its back on our metro rail system.
May I add to that? I do think that there are some examples of what's taking place around bus rapid transit. Certainly looking out along the improvements that are going to be made in Virginia along the Route 66 corridor, there will be an increase in bus service out there. The Route 7 corridor, Coos Falls Church, they're looking at some bus rapid transit options there. And in Alexandria, it's already taking place with some of that. So some of those are more urban than other areas, and buses can work, but certainly buses offer a lot of flexibility. You don't have to operate the same place every day, all the time, and there can be different options available to you there. So I think you will see some improvements or increases in bus long term. It may be from Metro, it may be from some of the jurisdictional bus systems, but it has to be a major part of the mix.
Thank you. Elder, I think you're up next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good evening, both of you. Thank you so much for being here. I am a DC resident, but I do travel around Maryland, DC, and Virginia. So therefore, I am going to talk to both of you about this. When I do ride the metro and or the bus, I think that what allows me to ride with confidence is because I do know that there is not only security and safety that is in place right now to make it better, but also because I do know that the system is really working. When I say the system, I mean by that the elevators, the escalators, the lifts, the signage, etc., etc. So respectfully, I want to ask and or pretty much to invite you to ride the metro. If you do so, it is great. If you don't, I would like to invite you to ride the metro with a person who has a disability. And allow me to say a visible disability, that by this I mean a person who has a, who uses a wheelchair, or a person who is blind and uses a cane and has to navigate the system. And this invite is because I would like that you have a better understanding in terms of the accessibility, how important it is for us to know that we can ride with confidence every day because the system is working. And I do know and I understand how important is your input. It is so vital for the board. So I think that having this opportunity to ride with a person who has a visible disability will allow you to go, both of you, to see where, how, and in which areas the elevators or et cetera is really working or not, and what needs to be improved. But overall, it's just to have a better understanding how we need to ride with confidence, knowing that the system is really working. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's see, I don't know if I met other members from DC or Virginia who want to speak, so I can go around the room. Charlie, you're from Maryland, you don't count. we'll go around and see if other committee members. Charlie, we will get to you, sir. Denise, did you want to ask any questions?
Yes.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you for coming this evening, both of you. I am from Suitland, Maryland, and Maryland, PG, I have a lot of concerns, but we're getting a lot of cutoffs of bus service and not going, you know, the area that the service is covering is not as far as in Virginia and Maryland. And so I don't know whether Maryland needs to contribute more or why the cutoff is so short, but that's a concern for the people at PG with the cutoff of the bus services and the metro service. Well, it stops Suitland and then it goes Greenbelt and Naylor Road, but we have a hard time getting to Clinton. There is no rail service to Fort Washington area, so we need the bus service to be stronger, not, you know, short and cut off. Thank you.
Denise, I think Blake and I would both agree that Maryland should contribute more.
Well, you know, at least you're being honest. But you have to say, are we saying that at meetings?
No. I'm only being facetious and say you're not here. Honestly, there's a lot of metrics that are looked at when they are looking at these. Unfortunately, can't go everywhere. But I will tell you that there is a lot of spirited debate throughout Metro, throughout. When the jurisdiction, the JCCs are meeting, so the jurisdiction planning groups are meeting, they are really looking at the metrics on ridership. And a unfortunately, we cannot be all things to all people, but it really comes down to where the biggest bang for the buck is going, and that's probably not appropriate, that's probably not the right way to say it, but where the biggest need for service is will be those routes that are continued. And I don't distinguish between Virginia, Maryland, or the district when I say that.
Thank you. Thank you. And I know that there have been comments. I was at the RAC meeting on Wednesday night, and there were comments from Mr. Goldman from Maryland, and he said that the decisions were not just made on number of riders, but also the populations. And so we look to see what the particular cuts will be. We do not want to see riders that have no other choice impacted and not be able to get from point A to point B. I think this committee said that, and I know I've said it in front of the board. Carolyn.
At least 10, we're going to count. No comment, because I'm in Montgomery County. This may be somewhat off the subject, but I'm just wondering, what is the point of the Mount Vernon train on the yellow line? I mean, it's like the train to nowhere.
Yellow lines. Mount Vernon is the yellow line.
Could you clarify your question a little bit
more? It's the yellow line train and it only goes to Mount Vernon Square and then it dumps everybody off. And when you're trying to get from baseball games or something, it creates a total backlog at Mount Vernon Space. Mount Vernon Square Station. That's between Gallery Place and U Street, pretty much.
Right. I mean, I can defer to the Metro, rail operations folks, but I think the basic idea is that you have overlapping service north of the city center beyond the core with the green line, and they have kind of time of day changes that they make to the northern end of the yellow line, because it just essentially overlaps with the green line service. But then on the southern end, they obviously have different terminus stations and different routes.
Steve, you're from Virginia, correct?
D.C.
I'm sorry. You have a question?
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Hang on, you have one shot. Let me go around the room. Okay. I'll recognize you the next time. As a matter of fact, I remember that your question had two parts to it, too, didn't I?
Thank you. Very
third part. Steve, you're up. Steve?
Oh. Thank you. Let me just get my questions together in one chat. It seems as though I live in Washington D.C. Northwest near DuPont Circle. It seems as though there are opportunities to better coordinate service between the circulator and buses. And I know of two instances. One extending the Woodley Park one just a bit, and it would cover the zoo for a lot of tourists. And the second to move the Roslyn DuPont Circle circulator to DuPont Circle. Right now it's on the other side, and that would serve DuPont Circle. I'm wondering, is there an individual or a department that deals with coordinating this that would be good to contact?
Yes, that's a good question. That would be DDOT, and the individual to contact, his name is Sean Egan, but the staff here at WMATA can give you all of his contact information.
Okay.
That's a very timely question, because we're right at the beginning of our service planning process, so we're going to be studying all of our routes, and we're going to be making adjustments if they make good business and transit sense. So the timing of your question is spot on.
Sean Egan and, okay.
And Christian and his team can give you his email
and phone number. The second question, I think, and I think it's a DDOT Metro question also. There are two DC to New York buses that were placed at just off DuPont Circle towards the end of the Gray administration, that DuPont Circle residents, when we meet and we've noticed, one of the two bus lines blocks the 42, often to the point that the driver has to get out and ask the, because it goes through a very narrow corridor on Connecticut Avenue into DuPont Circle. The other best bus actually blocks the N2, 4, and 6 because it completely blocks that right turn lane into DuPont Circle. Is there a department or individual that might get involved with this kind of planning?
Sean Egan. Same person, one stop shop, and I'm familiar with this exact issue, as is Sean. But okay, you can add that to the conversation. We've been having some issues with the operator of that's a bus service, and them being kind of outside the limits of their permitted curbside use.
Yeah, right. Even the DuPont Circle Association and many of the residents wonder whether they should even be that close to DuPont Circle, and they were placed there for, you know, they were moved there from spots that worked very well just a block away. So okay, good. And the last point. In some cities, I know LA is one where they're trying to introduce more bus service. They have set out individual lanes for buses on streets such as K Street. Wilshire Boulevard, K Street is very similar, and they've also permitted bus operators the capability, if needed, to alter the red-green light structure to make it express. Is that being given consideration?
Yeah, so the answer to that question is yes. We have a number of corridors that we're working with WMATA to create dedicated bus lanes. We have an example of that on 7th, just south of Howard University. So we've already put in some dedicated bus lanes. There's about a 3/4 mile dedicated bus lanes there. We have a much more extensive project that we are bringing through the design process for 16th Street, the 16th Street corridor. We're talking about a much lengthier, dedicated bus operation there that will also coincide with some bus stop consolidation, some efforts that we're going to try with WMATA to speed the boarding process. So we're going to try to do some things with regard to off-board loading of fare cards and things like that. And then another corridor that we're looking at is the H and I Street corridor. And there's a study going on there as well. So dedicated bus lines are definitely something that we're looking to advance. And we also have completed a signalization project with WMATA just last summer, which now gives us the capability to give a signal priority, not preference. So preference is the actual, you know, operator initiated change of the signal. We haven't gone that far, but there is a hardware, I think at about 195 traffic signals within the region that give WMATA buses preference. And then there are also examples within the district of where WMATA buses are allowed to essentially jump ahead of the flow of traffic. That's called a queue jumping signal. I think we have about 4 or 5 of those, and there'll be more on the way now that we have this hardware. So those types of enhancements that other regions have benefited from, we're now in a position to start accruing those types of benefits here.
Thank you. Brianne, my apologies to you. You had your hand up earlier, and I haven't got to recognize you yet. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Brianne Butler from Washington, D.C. I've been in D.C. now for about almost 13 years, and I primarily use the metro, rail, with some bus once in a while, but I'm not a bus person, so that's the rail. So I mostly ride within the district, but sometimes I go out and venture out. Most of the time it's in the district. And I just wanted to share with you both today, doesn't matter if Maryland, Virginia, D.C., you've heard a lot today about physical access on the rail and the bus. But I want you to also be mindful that Washington, D.C. has the largest justified hearing community in the United States and probably in the world. It's so concentrated here because of places like Delaware University and the federal government being just a model employer for people who are justified hearing. So there's a large employment opportunity to live here in the district. So we have a large number of deaf-hearing people, so there is a barrier in communication. So when we ride the metro every day, we struggle to find out information regarding if a situation has arisen on the rail, such as, you know, rail, when the train breaks down, or, you know, bus changing numbers, or this is the last stop, please get off. A lot of times, you know, those things are not visible to us. It's always announced over the public announcement system. So it's a huge frustration, huge headache for many thousands of deaf-hearing people who ride the metro, and they're constantly afraid what will happen if they were ever caught in an emergency, such as, you know, some of the situations that we've already experienced in the last couple of years. Fortunately, there has been a deaf-hearing person on those trains when the incident occurred. But what happens the next time? And so many of us have that concern of, you know, who is going to tell us what's happening and ensure that we're safe as well. And I can't tell you how many times I've been stuck on a platform in the system not knowing why the train has to run or where everybody's going, why is everybody leaving the platform, and why am I the only one standing here, or why am I the only person on the train, car, or, you know. So I just want you to think about those things, not only physical aspect, but communication aspect, because you factor for metro. Just want to be sure you have that in mind when you think about the various things with accessibility. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Brianne. Redundant communications. I mean, whenever we're asking for systems, making sure that the deaf community is part of the communication package is critical. Brianne is here to, you know, work with us to make sure we don't forget that. One of the areas that we'll get an update on tonight is going to be the use of the whiteboards within the rail system. But I think that's something that when we're putting systems together, making sure that the deaf community has access to the same communications as everybody else is critical. Let me go to Doris and
if I make a comment on that?
Absolutely, thank you.
For the folks that are sitting around the room, I want to make sure that you're aware of how much Patrick does bring this subject up to the board. The fact that you have brought up numerous times the whiteboard, I don't want to call it technology, it's really not a lot of technology, but it's capacity to put messages out there to those folks who cannot hear the messages coming over the loudspeaker system. So you're being heard, and Patrick is a great spokesperson for you in doing that.
Thank you. Otherwise, they'll beat me up. They're a spirited group. Dora, you're up next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did you want Dr. Banerjee to go first?
No, ladies first. He already had two shots at the mic, didn't he?
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
My name is Doris Ray, and I'm a resident of Fairfax County, Virginia, and I work for the Independent Center of Northern Virginia, a disability community resource and advocacy center, and we serve people with all kinds of disabilities of all ages who live and work in Arlington, Fairfax, and Loudoun counties, and the cities of Alexandria, Fairfax, and Falls Church, and in that capacity, in my capacity as advocacy and outreach coordinator there, I travel all over Northern Virginia. And since I am a deafblind person, I also don't drive, I use public transit. So with that perspective, and also I represent the, I'm one of the two representatives of the Access for All Committee of the Transportation Planning Board at COP. And I'm a native Washingtonian, so I've used the system throughout my life, all over the contact area. So with that perspective, with regard to the budget you're considering and changes and elimination of bus service, and keeping in mind the changes and possible changes in operation of the subway system, I want to say on behalf of residents with disabilities in Northern Virginia that that the bus service that we are receiving to take us to and from metro stations and to cross the county are really inadequate in light of coming changes in the system. And I know certain bus services being cut, for example, and correct me please if I'm wrong, for example, the 1C I understand and the 2B are in danger of being eliminated. And that service, you have to take into consideration that frequently services like that have been cut back to schedules that are once every 70 hours on the weekend, or 70 minutes on the weekend, once an hour during the week. And if what you're looking at is how many people are riding it, it's a grave disincentive. A member of a local transit official has even said to me, frequency, routing and frequency of service is the key. Please don't cut the service. Enhance it where it will help people cross the county and get back and forth in that subway system and avert the changes in their lives because of reductions in the subway. With regard to the subway, I strongly believe that we should leave the closing time at midnight, and you're already cutting around the edges and making other changes, and I know that it's here in the public, but I think it's important to keep the original hours for everyday service set for people with disabilities to be able to live independent lives. And I want to bring up Metro Access. The concerns of Virginians with disabilities regarding the alignment, which was a reduced alignment in 2010 of the service area to align with the minimum ADA requirement, it is problematic. In fact, drastically affects the lives of people with disabilities in Fairfax County and other outlying areas, including people who are registered for Metro Access to come in and go through all of that, to come inside the service area and then get to work or whatever they're doing, going to the doctor or whatever. And so we believe that that concern needs to be addressed and returned to the original service area, which is the entire service area of the compact. Secondly, and this has been brought to our attention by members of the Virginia General Assembly when we were down there both last year, the year before, and the year before that, that the way that the alignment with the days and times of service that was implemented by WMATA impacts people with disabilities is that they can't go out in the evenings, they can't go to a job in the evening, they can't do anything over the weekend if there's no bus service, whether it's Metro bus service or whether it's connector bus service. We believe that this is negative to the at least the spirit of the ADA, and that we should turn back and look at that as we go forward in the future, because there, as Metro staff has already said, there aren't that many people impacted by that, and this is in Maryland, for Maryland residents as well, and some DC residents that are in that position. That we do not, I'll wrap up right now, we do not have to align our Metro Access service by days and times of service, and we do not have to use the minimum ADA alignment of 3/4 of a mile, and people with disabilities in Virginia and our legislators are asking you to do something about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Doris. Okay, thank you. Let me go. Thank you, Doris. That covers just about everything we've discussed. Let me go to Charlie and then back to Tappan. I'd also like to ask our board members. I respect your time, and we appreciate you being here. We don't want to take your whole evening. So, two more questions, maybe.
I'll say the one you need.
Thank you for that. We appreciate that. Charlie, you're up.
Thank you. Good evening. I guess I'll try to paraphrase like what your JFK School of Government kind of classes. There's a situation going on in Washington, D.C. that was reported by Mark Nakara from WAMU relative to accessible taxis, and a whole lot of them just sitting there not going anywhere because nobody's driving them. And that's problematic, not only from the sense of taxi people in wheelchairs needing taxis, but it's also has a chilling effect on operations going on in Montgomery County, for example, whereby the county is attempting to find a way to apply a surcharge that is charged to Uber rides to benefit persons who have not been able to take advantage of the Uber situation. And so my concern is, and I need some advice from you guys, because you know this is what you do for a living, right? What would you suggest happen that we can make the incentive for a person to utilize an accessible taxi or private vehicle good enough so that they actually will do that, and you achieve parity in the services for people using wheelchairs and also people with service animals? And oftentimes Uber drivers, or I'm not a captain Lyft driver yet does that, but sometimes they will tell you they can't take you, and that's just wrong.
Can I ask a kind of a clarifying question to that? I'm very familiar with the issue. It's my understanding that the Department for Hire Vehicles, that's the former Taxi Cab Commission, has been able to deal with some of those equipment issues over the past 6 months. Is that not a fair assessment? I know that initially there was some fleet that was not being utilized, but they had, I thought, addressed that through the arrangements that they had with the taxi cab companies.
Maryland or D.C.?
D.C. Is that imbalance still presenting itself? Because I thought they spent a lot of time on trying to renegotiate their agreements with the taxi cab fleets.
Well, the report was made about 10 days ago, and so there are still taxis that might be utilized, but as I recall, there were some measures being attempted or taken in D.C. to equalize the situation yet. But it is a serious situation, and my concern is that we don't set up a transportation system that has, for lack of better words, de facto separate but equal, because it's not equal. And so we need to make sure that everybody who qualifies to get a ride should get a ride.
Okay. Okay, I'd be happy to follow up on that. I did not see that article, but I am familiar with the original reporting on that, which was about 12 to 18 months ago. But I'm happy to follow up with the chairman of the four-hour vehicle agency.
Thank you. Thank you, Charlie. Good. Let me go back to Tam, and then I don't know, Paul, I know you wanted to speak. I might be able to take two questions from the audience. Whether other committee members want to speak. Let me go to Tam for a short question.
Very, very short question, because my colleague Doris has already explained in detail the issues related to metro and bus services needs for the disabled people and ADA requirements. So I'm not going to go to that, Mr. Chairman. My question is to both of the representatives of our board here. One, you are president in the Congress of Virginia, close to it, and also representing the mayor of Washington, D.C. So from that point of view, that you are working also with us here, with the WMATA, there has been an issue raised, or I've heard it in the paper, and also by the Department of Transportation, and because of the budget constraints and problem with safety and issues of supervision and management of the program of the whole WMATA, that maybe there could be a third party look into this supervision of this position, maybe somebody from the Department of Commerce, or Department of Transportation, DOT, or something like that organization. Now, any feedback from both the governor of Virginia or from the mayor on these issues? Is it just a rumor, or is it going in that direction, or is it true, or any feedback you can give us? Because I'd like to see that we stay with the money as it is now, as a accessible services board committee member. But I don't know if you have any feedback from the
there are a number of moving pieces right now when it comes to the oversight of WMATA. In the Commonwealth of Virginia, Maryland, and the district, they are currently in the process of putting together a new safety oversight commission. That Safety Oversight Commission will take the place of the old TOC. Currently, however, FTA is providing oversight of WMATA. FTA wants to move away from that to the Safety Commission. You've probably heard all about this, and that is well along the process. The General Assembly in Virginia and the General Assembly in Maryland, as well as the Council, the District Council, have now passed legislation to form that. Now it has to be signed by the governors and it has to be implemented to be put into action. That's probably going to take it best that, you know, the rest of this year to actually have the commission in place. Having said that, there are a number of organizations calling for reform. There are Congressman Delaney from Maryland has entered a bill into congressional legislation, and it's rumored that Congresswoman Comstock from Virginia will do the same in the very near future. There are organizations that are recommending an oversight commission, a new board, new funding sources, a lot of different things. So there are a lot of moving pieces, but I will say that a lot of those recommendations have taken place or have been made in the past as well. So we do know that improvements are needed, reforms are needed, and at the income level, at the expense level, at the performance level. I don't think anybody on the board feels differently than that. It's just a matter that we have to work within the constraints that we do have to make sure that we can provide the best system, the safest system, the most financially sustainable system. And I think that's what the board is committed to at this point.
Thank you. Let me go to Randy next. Randy Pope.
Hi, I'm Randy Pope, and I'm a deafblind individual. And the deafblind community has seen a lot of progress, which has been wonderful, in regards to technology, and that has provided assistance, and a lot of different things. And we have worked with different people to try to understand the deafblind community. Now, we are a very small community. And I would say we've got about 150 deafblind in the DC metro area. Now, because of all the financial cuts that are being talked about and budget cuts and talking about the different areas that will be impacted by that, the deafblind community really depends on new technology and a lot of different technology that's created by various corporations and companies out there. So I wanted to ask you, how do you feel about these financial cuts and how they may impact the research and development for new technology for within the system, specifically for people with disabilities, as well as just new research on safety for Metro as a whole, you know, meaning the train or the bus or the various aspects of the system. So because of all this financial hardship, I'm just wondering what the effects of that will be in the area of research and development.
Well, that's a great question, and it's certainly something that you know, we need to be sensitive to. My assumption, but I would certainly have to refer to some of the management professionals at WMATA, but my assumption is that with regard to, you know, a lot of the technological applications and innovations across this field, we're somewhat downstream from the work that gets done by different companies and institutes that are more active and more resourced with regard to research and development. I do know that we have a pretty strong IT and frankly innovative set of folks who work within the department, but for the most part, I think they're evaluating different applications that have already gone through, you know, the R&D phase of product development and have been probably even been assessed by the American Public Transportation Association, APTA. So there's a lot of kind of peer testing that goes on before things are used more broadly. But the general theme and concern expressing your question, I think, is extraordinarily valid. Many people in the transit industry and also users of transit systems are waiting to see what happens at the federal level, because there are very clear statements in the Republican national platform that are opposed to transit being funded by the national government. There's a preference that be devolved to the states and cities. And if that were to happen, I think one of the consequences is that you wouldn't have the benefit of the federal government doing research and development, and the federal government sending grants to different universities and to work with private companies to achieve innovation. I think that would be very harmful to us at the local level. The federal government historically has done a lot with regard to research and development, not just in transit, but in aviation and also the automobile industry. I don't hear anyone really talking about the federal government stopping the work that they're doing in aviation or the automobile industry, but they are talking about maybe pulling back with regard to transit. If that were the case, that would be devastating to the users of transit systems. Ultimately, it would mean that we would just have more expensive operations and we'd have lower value to the traveling public. So right now it's kind of a wait and see, but I don't think anything in the budget that could be corrected, but anything in the budget that we're talking about would really impact our ability to innovate going forward. But I do think that there are cuts to service. There are certainly some reductions in the overall personnel at the agency. So I don't want to minimize the cuts that are on the table. But I don't think that they're going to impact our research and development capacity. But again, the WMATA staff, if there was a particular item that had been proposed by the general manager, I would hope that they would correct me so I'm not making kind of a false statement.
Thank you. I have members of the public that would like to speak, so could I have like either 1 minute for a question or statement from each member of the public?
1 minute. It will be 1 minute, but who are the members of the audience you would like to recognize, Mr. Chairman?
Tell me. I don't have names. I'm sorry, Mr. Blake, I don't have names. I know Mr. Orleans. Raise your hand and introduce yourself.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. This is not a public comment period session, but this is two people from the public to make a question or a statement to the board member that are here present. Okay. Just to be
and
clear.
And the names you have are Bill Orleans and it's not public comment.
Hi, thank you all for this permission. I don't think one has to agree with the suggestions from Representatives Delaney and Comstock as to how the board should be reformulated. I don't. To agree that the past and current members of the board have very often done a good job. And I apologize, I don't think that the board has. I'd like to suggest that anytime anybody is appointed by anybody to anything, board, committee, commission, or in this instance, the board of directors, the people appointed should not be supplicants to the people who appointed to them. And I think I fear that over the years that I've been back in town, the last 14 years, the board of directors of WMATA, frankly, aren't acting as independent agents on behalf of the riding public, whether it be rail, bus, or metro access. They are concerned with protecting their jurisdictional, the opinions of the jurisdictional appointing authorities that put them in this position. Earlier, the subject came up about the lesser state of bus service in Prince George's County. Before I returned to town 20 years ago, Brookings published a study of Region Divided. Everybody, I think, I've never heard anybody suggest that the main means of uniting the region is WMATA. And I don't understand why the jurisdictions within WMATA, such as Fairfax, such as Northern Virginia, such even as the district west of the river, want to perpetuate a region divided. Bus service cut in Fairfax or in Northwest and even a little bit Northeast, the district, has a lesser effect on more people than bus service cut in Prince George's County. So I would think that members of the board of directors of WMATA should be advocating for those riders, bus riders, and metro access riders east of the river as well as west. One last thought, if I might. I don't understand the need for the jurisdictions to have their own transit, or provide their own transit services. Fairfax may have a refined system in the connector apparently during the week. Fast trans may be a good metro access, maybe a good paratransit system. I don't know. I've never used either the connector or fast trans. Similarly in Arlington, similarly in Alexandria, certainly in Montgomery County, Ride-On is a good system. I don't understand why the Metro Board and the region as a whole doesn't aspire to a regional transit system. A whole degree of savings could occur in procurement and administration. And as it relates finally to paratransit, 60 years ago, as UMTA was being...
Bill,
if you're
out of
20 seconds. As the Urban Transportation Act could be within 20 seconds. Pass, did you say out of 20 seconds?
I'm counting, you're down 15 now.
As the Urbanized Transportation Act was being written 60 years ago, the national, what was then called the National Taxi Cab Association, lobbied to be left out. As a consequence, in the original act, taxis are not considered transit. Taxis, and years later, taxis came to describe and define the original use of the word paratransit. There's no reason why we couldn't have a universal regional taxi system, I would argue operated by WMATA, where each cab, each vehicle being accessible, could pick up both the general population as well as the, those with special needs.
We've got three other members of the public. We could keep it to 1 minute.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think we're going to go down to, we have one more person for 3 minutes.
One more person. Okay. Thanks.
Hi, thank you guys so much for letting me speak tonight. This is Raina Govale, and I know we've talked about the deafblind, which is a marginalized group and seems very underrepresented. Another group that is underrepresented that I'd like to speak for are folks who are blind and who rely on wheelchairs. That presents a very unique challenge. I know when I travel the metro system every day, I encounter barriers that make my travel dangerous if I'm not careful. It could just be like 1 second of a slip, I can be closed into a door. I find that a lot of the times the trains are not even with the platforms, and you know I have to have time to put my cane out and see how far the crack is so I can know if I have to jump it with the wheelchair or if I'm going to get my wheels stuck. And I actually had it happen today, and unfortunately a lot of these drivers don't like to wait. The one today that almost closed me in the door only gave me about 10 seconds to get off the train. Mind you, I had to wait to see if he was trying to come on, feel the crack with my cane, and see if it's necessary to wheel it. I misstepped or misjumped, I should say, and I got the wheels in the cracks. But fortunately, it's easy to get out of. You know, you can go backwards on the wheels and get up. But I would like to propose that, you know, if there is something possibly that can be done to increase those barriers, have it so that the trains can be more level with the platform, a little closer so there's no cracks, and also propose that drivers possibly keep the doors open for about 20 seconds to leave people on and off. You know, people with strollers, people with chairs. It could apply more to us and more to others, and it would be a lot safer. And another barrier I've seen is some of the elevators are labeled wrong. Like if you go on the platform in McPherson Square going in the direction of Vienna and you get off there, the elevator going up button is labeled correctly, but the help button is labeled as press for elevator down, and that could be misleading for somebody who is blind and wheelchair might need help because the elevator is not working or something. They may not know that's what it means unless they play with it. And the elevator to the street level going out of McPherson, I haven't seen a label on that button at all for the elevator going up to the street. You just have to know what it is. So these are like some of the concerns I have for the population of those of us who are blind and who rely on wheelchairs, is we're a very unique population. And I mean, possibility we could work together to help you guys address it, like possibly like test it or what have you. We'd be glad to do so.
Thank you very much. If I could jump to Paul for the last word.
All right, I want to say this, that the general manager has come out today with a press release on, his revised budget has these important items that people should know. It just literally came out today. More than $5 million in bus service changes have been withdrawn from the revised plan, mostly adding back routes in Maryland, Virginia that has been proposed for reduction or elimination. The second bullet item it talks about in the revised budget changes is that no paratransit rider is left behind. All metro access access riders whose home address is eligible for service today will continue to receive paratransit service. No bus routes will eliminate except for these paratransit customers outside the current service zone. And number three, Lifeline bus service is added to support riders impacted by a change in late night rail service hours. Just an FYI, it came out today.
Thank you, Paul. And I think, number one, I'd like to say thank you to both our board members that are here today. I'd also like to say thank you to this committee for the work that you have done in advocating for this these positions. I think that with everything that we've been faced with this budget coming up, that I think the disability population has fared pretty well. What I've seen, and I'll just make this comment, then we're going to go on to our next agenda item. What I've seen from the board members that have attended our meetings over the last several months, the attention to this committee is extraordinary. I would very much like you to take that back to other members of the board. I was at the RAC meeting on Wednesday night, and the board members that attended there from Arlington and Montgomery County were very attentive also. The amount of attention that I think the board of directors for WMATA is spending with the constituents from the AAC and the RAC, I think it's just extraordinary. And I appreciate it, and I think that even though it's tearing my agenda to shreds, I think that this is very valuable. I very, very much appreciate your time and attention. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to jump back to my agenda if I can, and I do have a board report that I do need to get approved. Do I have a motion to approve the board report as submitted?
I make a motion, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. Do we have a second?
Second.
Good. Any discussion? I hope not. Doris. Go ahead, Doris.
Okay, there were a couple of things in there that were of concern to me, and Mr. Chair, now my mind is befuddled. I came here prepared to address them. With regard to the evacuation procedure, which is the last item, waiver, okay. There is a statement in there that we understand that the purpose of the exercises is to train people with disabilities so that they can get out of stations and trains in the event of an emergency. But actually, I would say that is a byproduct, and rather my understanding of the encouragement to us to participate is to represent the disability community, the needs of the disability community, and be able to help train the first responders. And I think that that needs to be recognized in the letter, and also that we, as members of this committee, are providing, unlike just volunteer members who are recruited from the community, are providing a service. But in fact, those volunteer members from the community who are serving also do, and who are participating also do, and they have the extraordinary need and should have a reasonable accommodation of not having a waiver. And I think that sentiment needs to go into the letter.
Thank you, Doris. Any other additions to the board report?
Mr. Chair, there was one other that I had that I wanted to ask you about.
Go ahead.
Okay, so I just need a reminder about the topics, not being able to read it, look down at it right here. And I don't have it. Just the reminder of what the main topics were, because it was the second one, I think.
Doris, this is B. The main topics for the board report, we have the trip planner. That was the first one. It's called Trip Planner Bus Stop View Tool. The second was bus stop signage.
Was the signage, yes. And that's what I wanted to bring up. We did discuss the fact that, and it was brought up in our meetings, that tactile signage is not necessarily available at bus stops throughout the region for the next bus function, so that a blind person traveling throughout the region, particularly when they don't regularly use a bus stop, cannot get a number off of the bus stop sign. And so making the trip planner therefore inaccessible, I mean not trip planner, but the next bus ID number function inaccessible.
Thank you, Doris. Okay, those two updates to the board letter. And are there any other additions or corrections?
I don't have a question.
Do I have a motion to accept the board letter as amended? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Great. Those opposed? And those abstaining. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to jump on the agenda because we have two members here, Joe and Mr. Cotton from Columbia Lighthouse, to give us an update on Click and Go and Wayfinding project with Columbia Lighthouse. Is Joe Ciappi and Mr. Cotton here? Oh, good. Okay, thank you.
Okay. This is Joe Ciappi, and since we're running a little later than I had anticipated, I'm going to significantly shorten my presentation. I had a PowerPoint outline that B is pulling up on the computer right now. So I'm gonna move through this relatively quickly.
All right, we do have some time because I think maybe Paul and Bus Rail, we may cut those subcommittee reports. So I think this is an important subject.
Okay, so let me just begin very briefly with a background. I'm going to report on what we're installing, implementing in the WMATA system as a phase two project. My background in developing this technology, I'm coming from a deaf-blind professional experience. So I spent 30 years working with people who are deaf-blind, traveling independently using transit in New York, Boston, Minnesota, and in Seattle. And usually, technology solutions that are developed bypass this population. And my work in that area led me into tactile mapping, and it led me into developing what is called Click and Go, which is the technology that we are putting into to seven stations right now in WMATA. So my background is as a teacher, and I've worked to leverage developing technology and make it effective and useful for people who are blind and deafblind, and also people who use wheelchairs. Okay, this technology is a service and a technology. So I don't know how many of you are familiar with what we did for the phase one in Gallery Place, but it was a project that humanly compiled narrative directions for every conceivable route from the perimeter above ground, from every bus stop above ground of Gallery Place to every entrance, to every fare gate, to every platform, to every change of platform, to every fare gate, to every exit, to every bus stop. Anywhere you want it to go, you can select a starting point and an end point, and a narrative that has been crafted for a blind traveler is available in steps. And what we did was we had applied for a second grant that has sort of upgraded that project to a seven-station project that will provide not only narrow directions, but also low-vision, high-contrast maps and iBeacon messaging in real time that will deliver audio broadcasts to the travelers as they walk different routes. If there are any questions as I'm speaking, I'm pretty informal, so don't wait until I'm finished. Feel free to put your hand up. Okay, these narratives, they include information about slope and texture and sound and distance that is typically not available through any other information that you might get through WMATA or any other wayfinding system. It's free for users. It's there's no equipment to maintain. There's a free app, and we actually deliver it from low-tech to high-tech. So people who don't have smartphones can get this information, and I can talk about how. And then people who use smartphones can get it very, very easily using an app. One of the things that we recognize, and I think the community members here who are blind already know this, but I think some of the other folks don't usually know it, is that we're talking about a very diverse community of travelers. So there is not a single solution that will meet the needs and preferences of this community. There is a need for multiple solutions as sort of a toolbox of solutions. So I'm going to talk about that a little bit later. Okay, the narratives. They are the heart. I'm sorry, I'm looking at the wrong slide. This is a technology that can serve multiple user groups. So blind, deafblind, wheelchair traveler, elderly, low vision traveler. And someone mentioned earlier that she was blind in a wheelchair, and we made a point with this phase two project to compile routes that will include all elevator access, so that when you are about to enter a station or you're planning to use a station, you can choose the elevator entrance or the escalator entrance and get the directions that make the most sense for you. One of the important features of this technology is that it allows for pre-journey learning. So if you needed to travel to a certain destination and you had to use the Gallery Place station or one of the other stations, you can virtually travel to a platform and understand all of the challenges that you're going to face from your living room couch the night before, and you can review it. And then when you do it that next day, you're, in a sense, doing it for a second time. So there's a very important opportunity to review and preview all of this information. Okay, the narratives. They're,
Denise?
Yes, go right ahead.
Denise? You had a question.
Are you showing slides now?
I have slides up, but everything that's on the slides, I'm speaking. So you're not missing anything that's on a slide.
Okay, is there any way we can hear it? I mean, hear what you're presuming?
Well,
I'm a blind person, so...
I am presenting what is on my slides. I'm just saying more than what is on the slide. What is on the slide, I'm speaking out, and then I'm adding to it because I never read from my slides.
What I'm asking is there a way we can hear the app and what it will present to us?
The app? I will play some samples of the app.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Sorry, I thought you were talking about the PowerPoint slides. Okay. So the narratives are humanly compiled. I go with a team into these stations and we gather information about every route as though we were doing this work as a mobility instructor with a blind traveler. So I am a mobility instructor. We're using a small team of mobility instructors to do all of this work. One of the challenges with these narratives is that there are no conventions for describing space that all blind community members agree upon. And even something as simple as a turn. Some people like to use degrees, some people like to use compass directions. There's a great deal of diversity here, and we're trying to work towards getting some conventions established. But the bottom line is the information that's presented is helpful, and it's a whole lot better than not having any data going into these stations. The bottom line is a lot of blind and deafblind travelers that feel unable to use the system, it's not because they don't have the skill, it's because they don't have access to the information. And this is a technology, an app that will give you information that will inform you about the station and about the route. And I'll play you a sample route so you have an understanding of what this sounds like. I'm going to turn on my voiceover, and I'll play an example from a bus stop at Gallery Place to the to an entrance. Just give me a moment to set this up. I'm not very highly skilled at voiceover. Okay, so this will be the 7th Street northbound bus to the escalator entrance.
Voiceover on. Wayfinding. Columbia Lighthouse for the Blind. Click and go DC Metro Wayfinding Project. Map up. Route map. 4 steps from 7th Street northbound bus stop to 7th and 8th Street escalator entrance.
That's the route. 4 steps from the 7th Street bus stop to the escalator entrance. So you can control all of the steps of information. Repeat them if you need to. So here's the first step.
1. Exit northbound bus just before 8th Street onto a brick surface sidewalk. Turn left. On your left is 7th Street. Ahead is 8th Street. On your right is a low concrete wall.
That's the first step.
2. Walk ahead to the corner within 30 feet, and turn right. Walk ahead, veer right, and trail along the right wall.
I can play you all the steps, but I think you get the idea. So, okay, sure. I'm also going to play you an example of a beacon broadcast.
Cancel.
Right here.
Cancel.
Let me just try to turn off my voiceover.
Accessibility selected. Select
voiceover off. Okay. So I was mentioning that one of the challenges with the narratives is that we really lack a body of spatial linguistics in the language that we all use. We're not used to describing space non-visually. And so there isn't any real consensus about how to do that. So we're working on that with feedback from community members, and we've been doing this at different venues around the country. Oh, I'm sorry, I haven't been asking Dee to go to the next slide, so I have. She has my slides, and I'm sitting quite a distance from her. Okay, next slide. Here are the different options for how we deliver the data from low-tech to high-tech. And the reason I'm very firm about wanting to deliver from low-tech to high-tech is because smartphones are expensive and data plans are expensive. And when I worked in New York with the deafblind community, and I did a lot of Spanish work, these were very challenged communities that even if a cane was broken, that was a major expense to replace. It's not that easy for a lot of these community members to go out and buy an iPhone and get a data plan. So I want to have this information available so that they could go to a public library, even if they don't have a computer, they could download the entire body of data for each station to their player. It's all available in text, MP3, there's even an old-fashioned interactive voice response free telephone number that they can call to get specific routes. So there are multiple formats available for people to get this information. Next slide. Okay, I mentioned before that the toolbox of solutions. Ideally, and this is my ideal list, for true accessibility in a transit system, in a subway station, it would include the following. Tactile maps, customized directions that are accessible that describe the route, virtual tours, low vision maps for people who have residual vision that is not sharp enough to read station maps, iBeacon support in real time, a pre-journey learning option, and I'm going to add two more. One of them is on the slide, and one of them is tactile walking surface indicators. For those of you who don't know what they are, they're guidance tiles is another term, and I have some in my hand that I'll pass around. These are tiles that are adhered to the walking surface, and you can follow them with your cane. And they're much more common in Europe and Asia. We don't see them much in the U.S., but they are key to your deafblind ridership to be able to maintain orientation safely on a center platform, for example. So that's one. And the other thing that I see, is I do a lot of traveling around the world, is for the best type of safe, accessible environment on a platform, especially a center platform, are the platform screen doors. So it's impossible to fall into the track. I'm going to condense some of my information, but since I know that what is ahead in some of the slides, and I spent a lot of time in New York, by contrast, D.C. to New York, there are on average 50 to 60 deaths every year in New York City in the transit system, people getting hit by cars, by trains, and an average of 150 to 160 people getting hit and still surviving. So those are pretty serious numbers, and there's good reason for very capable blind travelers to be a little anxious when they're in these environments, because there are not usually any accessible features in place. Okay, I'm going to move on to the next slide, and I want to talk about the features of the phase two for WMATA. I said that the phase one included directions only. There were searchable directions, and there were also virtual tours. So there was a global overview of the station, and then a specific route that you could choose to get into any platform or landmark within that station. Now we're adding low vision maps, and we're adding eye beacons. And we're adding them for the following stations: Metro Center. Gallery Place has already been started, but that's being enhanced with eye beacons and low vision maps. L'Enfant Plaza, Navy Yard, Roslyn, Fort Totten, and Silver Spring. Those were stations that were picked. I was not involved in the selection. I think it had to do with spreading them around the various states around the DC area. I'm going to play a sample of an eye beacon message, so that you have a sort of clue at what these sound like. One of the routes in the demo that I'm going to be presenting at Gallery Place, there are going to be 10 routes that are available to test, that anyone can go and test, and they will all have eye beacon support as you walk the routes. One of the routes is from the 7th Street northbound bus stop to either the elevator entrance or the escalator entrance. And as you walk towards your destination, you pass landmarks, and they will announce themselves to you, so it confirms your location on the route. So I'm going to just play a sample beacon message. This is what you would hear if you were walking the route and had the app. I just need to find it in my... Okay. Hopefully my microphone is working.
You are now near the 7th Street northbound bus stop along the curb edge.
Okay, so that would be a sample. As you're walking along the sidewalk, if you were looking for the 7th Street bus stop, you would hear that message, and it would complement the text narrative that you've already reviewed in the app. So there's two pieces to this. There's the narrative from the app, and then there are real-time messages that are audio messages that are delivered to your phone. And just for those of you who might be curious, there are technologies that will allow deafblind travelers to get these messages in refreshable braille. You have to have the equipment to get the message, but this is a message that is accessible to deafblind folks if they have the appropriate technology.
That's impressive. Good.
I'm going to ask Bea to... I'm just going to explain the slide that's up. I had gone into the app and given you a sample. What would happen is you can go, if you're looking for a route, you can go into the app, use VoiceOver, select a starting landmark, select an ending landmark, and then you just click for the route. So we can go through the next slide. So these two slides that I've just explained are just a demonstration of the list of how it appears in the app. So it would say starting landmarks, and then you would you would swipe and listen to the list of starting landmarks. When you found the landmark that you wanted, you just double-click it. And then you would go move on to the next task on the app. So now I'm just showing an example of a low-vision map. And what we're doing is we're creating high contrast, simplified, like very highlighting the prominent landmarks of an area, and then putting a very prominent route arrow. So
the low vision map is on your iPhone?
It would be delivered on a computer, on the iPhone, on an iPad. You could print it out. And it, there's a sample on the PowerPoint slide now that simply shows how to get from the 7th Street bus stop to the escalator entrance.
Okay, you've got a route that's highlighted, let's say.
That's right.
Gotcha.
Next slide.
Oh,
can't
see that.
Okay, now I mentioned tactile maps. I'm working on projects in New York and Philadelphia where we've added tactile maps to this package. We have three pieces here. Tactile maps are important. They're not commonly found in the U.S. I think they're very important because when you put your hands on a map, you understand the relationships spatially between landmarks that are represented. And you cannot describe that same thing to someone, no matter how articulate you are. So if you put your hand down and you feel the gymnasium and your dorm and then the bus shuttle stop, and you can understand their relationships to one another spatially, it's very hard to do justice to that in spatial terms by using a narrative. So I really support tactile maps. It's not part of this particular project, but that was part of the toolbox that I had mentioned. Okay, next slide. Okay, this is about iBeacons and the real-time location support that iBeacons provide. In the most simplest format, iBeacons will identify landmarks with an audible message. So for the sighted folks that are getting around these stations, even if they're not very familiar, they might have remembered some prominent visual landmarks, and those are orientation cues for those sighted travelers. Blind travelers don't have that luxury, but now with iBeacon support, you can actually label signage, visual signage, and prominent landmarks so that they make audible announcements to blind travelers. So they're getting the same kind of landmarking support that sighted pedestrians get in the system. The goal of the system is to, in an overall way, provide an equivalent to what sighted people get from various types of mapping systems and the signage available in these venues. So the simplest use was, as I said, identifying landmarks. Another use is to provide some kind of orientation support. You can announce that there's a slope coming up. You can announce that there's a hazard. I've actually used beacons in New York to announce what shouldn't even be necessary, but there's an overhead stairway hazard because the city hasn't put protection in. So if you follow along the wall, you actually hit your head on descending stairs. It's not legally, they're not supposed to still be there, but they're there. And so I'm using a beacon to identify it and also to try to nudge the city to get something done. But they have multiple uses. You can use them to identify danger areas. And we can even configure the beacons to trigger a vibration on the phone. So imagine you're walking along the sidewalk and you have to cross a light rail track. Or there is a very active bicycle lane that you have to cross. This is a problem for a lot of blind travelers and sighted travelers because sighted people aren't paying attention and bikes don't make a lot of noise and you can have an accident with a bicyclist. We can put beacons 20 feet with a 20 feet trigger and it announces to you be alert that you are approaching a bicycle lane. You might want to slow down, use your cane a little more prominently, and just be a little more careful because you know that there's some active bicycle possible collisions ahead and you want to be on guard. So there are multiple uses for these devices. Let's go to the next slide. Okay, in this slide I'm showing a graphic with a man who's getting off of a bus and has to walk a zigzag route to find a subway entrance. And he's following directions that he's received from the app. And he's not using beacons in this example. And we go to the next slide. And now we're using the same scenario. The traveler has gotten off of the bus and has to walk that zigzag route to the station. And he's using the narrative, but he's getting audio feedback as he passes landmarks that key him in to his entrance into the station. Okay, and I'm going to ask B to just skip the next two slides because they're very similar. And I want to just mention that we've got a couple of items of development that would be relevant to this project. And one of them is, I don't know if any of you remember a technology called talking signs, but it was from the 90s. Yes? Okay. Well,
word.
Yeah, okay, we're going right, and Bill Crandall. Well, we are introducing a similar version using beacons, and they're simply associated with multiple landmarks and visual signage in a venue without the laborious component of the narratives. Until those narratives can be compiled, whether there's not a budget for those, it's a much easier task to compile and install the beacons and have signage that is audible in different venues. Two items that we're launching, and one of these is being launched right now in New York City, and it's an audio beacon. And this is a beacon that you can trigger with your phone, and it actually generates a sound source publicly that you can localize towards. Now, I haven't really described this well, but the iBeacon messages are not public audio. They're discrete audio messages that come to your phone. When you hear it, you can't aim towards it because you don't know where it's coming from. With the audio beacon, you can select a trigger from the app, and it will make a public tone or phrase. And you can. This is helpful when you have to cross a large open plaza and there's no tactile reference for you to use to get to your destination. So this is something that we're launching in the next couple of weeks in New York, and it's something that might have relevance here down the road. The other development is an advanced beacon development with the messaging. I just want to mention, the beacons deliver messages in 360 degrees. So if I install a beacon in this particular location, It's not anyone coming from a north, south, east, or west direction could be getting that message. So I can't say in the beacon, with the beacon message, turn right at the next hallway opening, because they may be coming from the opposite direction of the person that I'm thinking about when I say turn right. So there, we have to word the phrasing of the messages prudently, so that we're giving information that's accurate no matter which orientation is made by the traveler.
So Joe, if I could jump in right here real quick. This is Chris Lake right here. So real quick, because we do have public comment and we have less than 15 minutes left for this meeting. So I hear and I know the audience is capturing all the great things that's possible, but beginning with the March 11th demonstration for the AAC, followed by a demonstration for the Access Board. In 2 minutes, because I will follow, but in 2 minutes, give us the practical experience that customers are going to see initially, not the future pipeline, but the practical, immediate impact customers are going to experience beginning with the demonstration on the 11th.
Okay, I will do that. Thanks. I'm going to ask B to fast forward to almost the last slide that says hands-on iBeacon demo. There it is right there. Okay, so on the 11th, we're going to give people a chance to get a walkthrough hands-on experience at Gallery Place, beginning at the F and 7th Street entrance. Now I want to emphasize that this is a beta experience. We were anticipating starting this project like a year ago, and every couple of months I'd get a call from the Access Board, or when are we going to get to try this? And I didn't want to delay it any longer, but we're just installing the beacons today and tomorrow. So I haven't had a chance to test them yet, and I would never be offering this for public use. But I think it's a beta experience, and just understand that we've just installed and I'm just going to begin testing this week. I'm pretty confident they're going to work fine. But technology has a way of surprising me. So here's what's happening on the 11th. There are going to be 10 routes available for you to try. I'd like to be able to have people send an email address to someone and we can send you those 10 routes. If that's possible, that would be great. Or we can somehow put them on the website for the Columbia Lighthouse venue. But it'd be great if people could let WMATA know if they want to come and try, and we can send you this information. 10 routes. They begin at the elevator, escalator entrance of F and 7th, and also the bus stop that's on that corner. From those three starting points, you can go in to the elevator, down to that elevator lobby, and the destination is the Glenmont Bound Red Line platform. You can also go in through the escalator, and you can return back to your starting point. So, though it's a simple hands-on, there are going to be some 25 or 30 beacons installed in the station for the demo. Starts at 9 a.m. on the 11th. Is that correct? 9 a.m.?
Right.
Okay. So, again, I'd like people to somehow make contact. Maybe we can talk about that. Abhi's going to talk about that later. So I'm going to close right there.
Thank you. I know there's probably lots of questions, but I do need to move on. We need to be in touch with the Columbia Lighthouse to get more information on this. This is very good, very exciting. Maybe we can do bus rail, have them come in and give us more information through bus rail.
Well, Mr. Chair, this is Bea.
Sorry, you do know that we have
a demonstration on Saturday, correct?
Right, yes, yes.
Okay, members need to sign up for that demonstration. There are a few members who contacted me, but I still need other members to sign up for the demonstration if they're interested. So if those members can see me before the end of this meeting, that would be great.
Very good. Okay, thank you, Bea. And I might have more just to follow up because I think this is an exciting demo, and I do want to do some follow-up on it. Thank you. Let's see, I've got 5 agenda items in about 10 minutes. So
we only have enough time, actually, for the public comment.
I understand. That's what I was just going to jump to. Let's jump to public comment.
Okay, I do have 2 people on the public comment, so here is Mrs. Stephanie.
Good evening. Hello, my name is Stephanie Smith, and I'm coming on part of the Metro Access. I came last meeting, and then I felt that, you know, I did have some, thank you, follow-up that, you know, was important. The first thing is that last Monday I had a doctor's appointment, and they arrived late to pick me up, but that was only about 10 minutes. That wasn't a problem. But getting ready to leave, I had a 3:45 to a 4:15 appointment, and I was in Hyattsville, Maryland. I live in Washington, D.C., near K and New Jersey Avenue, and they did not pick me up until 6 o'clock. They kept giving excuses that the bus was 7 miles away, 7 miles away. And my point is, just be honest with people. If you're late, if you have a problem, just share it with them. I kept standing by the door waiting for someone to come, and I needed to go to the restroom, but they said they'd be there in a few minutes. And I just believe that there should be more honest communication with the client as to what you were doing. And even coming tonight, like I said, I'm not that very far away, and they were late picking me up, and then they had 2 additional add-ons, and you saw that I got in here late. And I set these by appointment times, and there were several people on the bus that were, you know, coming over that were complaining. One lady had to walk a block to get on the bus, and I was telling them that they need to come to the meetings, and they just said that they made calls, and they just think that the customer service is just ineffective. I just believe that if you have something set up, that it should work. And that's why I'm here, because I just don't believe that you should just, you know, frustrate people. A lot of these people, you know, they have limited, you know, disabilities, and they're already fighting a challenge. And to have the service just frustrated me even more, I just think that's just cruel. And I'd like to see something done that's going to help relieve some of these problems. Thank you.
This is Paul Simmelfoot. I'm the Metro Access Subcommittee Chair. They have a staff here today who hopefully will address some of your concerns. I apologize for the service issues you're having, but they're here. I've already seen them. They should be already approaching and hopefully begin addressing those issues. And they do report it back out to us as a committee.
Point of privilege. It has to do with accessibility.
Doris, we have a member of the public.
Yeah, I know that.
Doris.
I can't hear
Doris.
Because the mic is not feeding into the assisted listening. So it's like the sign language interpreter had left. So could somebody check this, because I won't be able to hear the member of the public. Just like I couldn't hear the member of the last member of the public.
Okay, can we check that, please? Next member, please.
And that person should not continue until we have some idea whether the mics are working.
Next customer, Nicole, please.
Hello, I'm Nicole Miller, and I live in Fairfax County, and my trip last week, they added somebody onto our trips. I usually take a route to DC with another customer, and they almost made me late. I was at work just in time. The other guy that was going to the State Department, he ended up being late to accommodate this other customer that got added on to our trip. This happens almost all the time. I mean, at least twice a month, we are made late, and we're made late to work. That's my primary source of income, and you guys are getting subsidies to get us to places, and if we're not able to get to work, we can't pay our taxes, and your subsidy pool gets dried up. So please consider what you're doing to people who are just trying to get to work.
Thank you. Could we do a follow-up on that?
Thank you.
Paul, I'm going to recognize you for a motion, and then I want to go to Breanne for an update on the whiteboards.
So quickly, the motion I want is on.
Go ahead, Paul.
So the motion I would like to make is that the customer who wants to speak during public comment period needs to be present to do it. If they have comments that are written but not there, that it will be submitted to our system. We'll address those issues as they thoroughly do and report it back to the committee. So my motion is that, you know, the customer has to be present to make public comment and not by another customer present there, in all fairness.
But that the remarks from the customer will be submitted as part of the record and address.
Yes.
Thank you, Paul.
I second it for the purpose of discussion.
Right.
I'd like to discuss.
Doris, you've got 1 minute.
Okay. I'd like to amend the motion to say that the written comment will be distributed within 24 hours to the committee.
That's fine.
Any other discussion?
No question.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? And those abstaining. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
Can we have a quick update on the whiteboards, Mr. Blaine? I understand that these have been installed and used within the Metrorail system.
That is my understanding, but we want to hear from a committee member.
So I received the email that the whiteboards had gone out before the inauguration ceremony. Since that time, I was traveling to visit the book over a month now, looking at every menstrual patient, every single menstrual patient I passed through, I asked that white words, and no one's known. Not, I think, not one person, and one employee I met at any of the menstrual patients knew what I was talking about. So I keep, I've been trying for a month now, going through different pages, I've been trying to give people benefit of the doubt. I know it's new, it needs time to implement, maybe they just need more training. So I've been going through the patients again and again, asking, you know, maybe sometimes the same employee, sometimes a new employee, no one knows what I'm talking about. So I'm not sure what to do at this point, so that's why I wanted to bring in a meeting and see if this is a training issue, if it's a dissemination issue, an implementation issue. I don't know, but I'd like to see something go out. Another thing I would like to see, I really think it would help push this, if WMATA will make a formal announcement that they have this in the system to customers, so the customers know about it, and then they would have to go to employees and say, I want the whiteboard, I want to come to you on the whiteboard. And that way, the employees have to know about the whiteboard. I think it makes WMATA look good. Why not? So I'd like to see some kind of formal campaign go out, maybe a TV commercial or something on your website or an email or something about the whiteboard, promoting the whiteboard, so there's more knowledge about it.
Brianna, have you seen a whiteboard?
Mr.
Chairman? No, she said she has not.
She has
not. No, in the last month. Mr. Blank, could we follow up on the rollout for the whiteboards and present that before the bus rail subcommittee?
So other Christian, this is Christian Kent.
Yes. I want to recognize Larry Hill for the final word.
If I could, I want to say to Ms. Berger that we will do that on one condition, that if we do any type of broadcast, if she will assist us, that would be very, very helpful. So, you know, we may come to her for some assistance to get that message out. But I think that it's very important that, you know, between the training for the employees, I know that when the whiteboards went out, that there were instructions. But I think that, you know, your point too is that, you know, if we're going to tell the customers that that is available, we want to really make sure the staff is ready. So that they don't have the same experience you did, or your frustration will be multiplied. So it's very important that we get that going. And Mr. Chair, before you adjourn, I wanted to address one subject that a member of the public raised to me, but I'll ask you to just let me know at what time that would be appropriate.
All right, let me go to Larry Hale, and we'll have the final word, sir.
I have a comment about the whiteboard communication.
Yes, but you're not recognized. Larry?
But I'd like to be recognized.
Larry?
Christian Kent actually stole my thunder. but I was going to mirror exactly what he said. I feel like two things need to happen. A, I feel that the operators definitely need to be trained on what to do with the whiteboards and make sure that everybody is aware. The frontline staff are aware that they exist, they know what to do with them and things like that. And then the second thing is the outreach aspect, which I completely agree with. Putting it out or do a press release on it, have Brianne help out with that. It's just media blitz until everyone knows that it's available. So the training and the outreach, I think, are both important ways of addressing it and making sure everybody is on the same page.
Let me just say one thing, Larry. I do understand that this is your last AAC meeting before you retire and go back to Boston. Boston is Boston's a win and our loss. I want to thank you for all the work and contributions you've made to the AEC. I know you come to some of the other subcommittee meetings, but I just want to say a personal thank you for everything you've done for us. Thank you so much.
Just note that a moment's available. questions or if there's any way that I can be of assistance.
Thank you, Larry. Hang on, no, Tom. I've got Doris for 30 seconds and Mr. Kent's going to wrap up.
I just wanted to make the comment that the Centers for Independent Living can help get the word out and that there are resources like the Northern Virginia Resource Center for Deaf and Hard of Hearing Persons and the NAD chapters throughout the region and other resources, though, that one might not think about to get to both the deaf community and the hard of hearing community who are still sighted.
Very good. Mr. Kent, you have the final word.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to just make a comment on behalf of a member of the public that earlier when the information went out regarding the buses or the bus service not being cut in such a way that it affects existing Metro Access customers, that is true, and we're very happy about that. But I did want to point out, though, that once the reductions in the bus service are made, that there is always the possibility that someone who is not an active customer right now might look at a location that they saw previously was being served and then come and find that location and say, oh, I see that Metro Access is not going there. So it's very important for us to be clear that the policy is still that Metro Access runs within 3/4 of a mile of the existing bus and rail routes. And I know there was some discussion this evening, I think Ms. Ray mentioned that if she had her druthers, that it would go back to the way that it was before, where we served all locations within the compact zone. That was a decision that was made a number of years ago, to try to keep Metro Access sustainable. I know this committee knows that, but I also know that you're here to advocate for people's needs. So we understand that as well. But I just, wanted to deliver that message to say that, if you're approached by someone and they say, well, I was affected by this because I don't live near where these routes were changed now, but I was thinking about moving or I was thinking about changing my plans and now I am affected. I wanted to make sure that all of you would be in a position to explain why that is. But we did go, to the effort, as we promised you we would, anytime that there's a proposed reduction of service, that we would look to see where the existing customers are and make sure that their home addresses were not affected, and that is the information we provided. So I hope that distinction is clear for everybody, and I thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And Tam, are we okay?
I'm okay.
So you're okay. All right. I'd like to have a motion to adjourn.
I make a motion.
If I might. Do I have a second?
Second.
All those in favor? Those opposed, meaning adjourned. And I'll just say that the general manager's letter sent me suggestions on what we should do with that letter.